for lack of a better word, people.
These people are gonna lower the quality of our work, Lula said, and God knows it's already pretty low.
How are we doing? I asked Connie. Are we catching up enough to do without a third person?
The problem is you catch up, but then we get a couple new FTAs and we're behind the curve again. I'm gonna divide these files between us and everyone has to pick the best person in their stack. Then we'll choose one of those three people.
We were still reading through the files when the Pinos guy arrived. We set the files aside, spread the food out on Connie's desk, and pulled up more of the funeral home folding chairs. I had my sub in my hand when Joyce Barnhart stormed in and threw a file on the table, splattering Lula's spaghetti sauce.
What the fuck's the matter with you? Lula said. You got a problem.
Yeah, I got a problem, Fatso. I don't like getting sent off on a goddamn wild goose chase with those LC files. I bet you all thought it was funny. See if Joyce can find Willie Reese, right?
What's wrong with finding Willie Reese? Connie asked. Those were legitimate files I gave you.
He's friggin' dead. He's been friggin' dead for almost a year. What do you want me to do, dig him up and cart him in here?
No, Connie said. I want you to bring me a copy of his death certificate so we can close the case and get our money back.
Oh, Joyce said. I didn't know I could do that.
I don't like being called a fatso, Lula said. I think you should apologize.
If the shoe fits, Joyce said. Or in your case, if nothing but a tent fits.
I'm not that fat, Lula said. I'm just a big woman. I'm Rubenesque. You wouldn't know that because you're ignorant. I know all about it because I took an art course at the community college last semester.
I know fat, Joyce said. And you're fat.
I didn't like Joyce frightening Melvin Pickle. And I didn't like Joyce calling Lula fat. And I really hated that Joyce was able to find stupid dead Willie Reese when I hadn't been able to find him.
Hey, Joyce, I said.
Joyce turned to look at me, and I threw one of my meatballs at her. It hit her square in the forehead and left a big splotch of marinara sauce.
Bitch, Joyce said, narrowing her eyes at me.
I narrowed my eyes back.
Slut? Skank? Hag?
Joyce grabbed Lula's spaghetti and dumped it on my head.
I am not a hag, she said.
That was my lunch, Lula said to Joyce.
And she dumped Connie's chocolate milkshake down Joyce's cleavage. Joyce pulled a gun on Lula, and Lula pulled a gun on Joyce, and they stood there pointing guns at each other.
I'm gonna fucking kill you, Joyce said.
Yeah, maybe, but I got a better gun than you, Lula said.
Your gun's a piece of shit compared to my gun, Joyce said.
I got a big whoop-ass gun, Lula said.
Please, Joyce said. I've got dildos bigger than that gun.
Oh, yeah? Well, I bet Stephanie could out-dildo you any day of the week. She's got a Herbert horsecock.
Are you shitting me?
No, honest to God. Tell her, Stephanie, you got a genuine Herbert horsecock, right?
It was a two-for-one sale, I said. Melvin had managed to crawl under Connie's desk while all this was going on. I looked down and saw him reach out and tag Joyce in the leg with a stun gun. Joyce gave a squeak, went limp, and crumpled to the floor.
I hope it was okay that I did that, Melvin said. I was afraid she was going to shoot someone. I never used one of these before. Will she be all right?
You did good, Lula said. Don't worry about Joyce. We zap her all the time. When she opens her eyes, we'll tell her she slipped in the marinara sauce and knocked herself out hitting her head on the desk.
I had noodles in my hair and noodles hanging off my ears and noodles sliding down my face.
You're a magnet for mess, Lula said to me. I've never seen anything like it.
I picked some noodles off my shirt and dropped them on Joyce. I have to go home to change. I'll be back later to go through my stack of losers. It was hard to go out through the bonds office front door and not look across the street. Even if I didn't look, if I kept my head down and my eyes averted, I felt the eerie sadness that always lingers on a murder scene. I drove back to my apartment, checking periodically for a tail, but so far as I could see, no one was following. I parked and trudged up to my apartment. I opened the door and ran into Ranger in my kitchen. He looked me over and gave his head an almost imperceptible shake.
Babe.
Food fight with Joyce Barnhart. I noticed Ranger had changed clothes and was looking comfy in washed-out jeans and a t-shirt. I'm surprised to still find you here, I said to him.
Tank had to put a threatened witness in the safe house, so I'm going to need to stay here. We've got federal surveillance on the office.
I thought you were working with them.
I'm working with one man, and he's not sharing that information with anyone.
Morelli isn't going to understand this arrangement.
You can't tell Morelli I'm here. He's a cop. He's supposed to arrest me if he finds me.
Ranger opened the refrigerator and took out a plastic-wrapped sandwich. Where'd that come from? I asked him.
Hal brought me some food and clothes and equipment.
Equipment? He unwrapped his sandwich and ate it standing.
In the dining room.
I looked in at the dining room and had to do deep breathing to keep from screaming. There were two computers, a printer and fax machine, four cell phones with chargers, two cases that I knew contained guns, four boxes of ammo, a large maglite and a small maglite, the scrapbook, a stack of folders that I knew were case files, and three sets of car keys. Two computers? I asked.
One's mine and the other we took from the apartment in Virginia.
Anything interesting on it?
His surfing history is what you'd expect. Fascination with martial arts, guns, law enforcement, some porn. He has one basic search program. No information stored that would be of any use. He's done some blogging, talking about wanting to be a cop, then wanting to be a bounty hunter. Then he starts mixing fantasy and reality. He talks about working with a superstar bounty hunter, how he's learning a lot but has no respect for his mentor. There's a brief mention of a manhunt where he tracks his quarry to Florida, and the blog stops at that point.
I imagine you were the quarry he was stalking.
Yes. His scrapbook was filled with photographs from that visit. That's how he knew about Julie. He followed me, did his homework, and put the facts together.
You never suspected you were being stalked?
No. I try to always be vigilant, but I didn't pick this guy up. It was a complicated surveillance, too. He had to follow me when I left the office, and then follow me into the terminal, learn my destination, and then buy a ticket in time to get on the plane.
Do you think he had an accomplice?
There's no mention of anyone else.
What about Carmen?
He'd already assumed his ranger identity when he met Carmen. He only uses her name once, and then she becomes Stephanie. And that's the main reason I'm staying here. I'm sure he's going to come after you. I want to be there when he does.
You'll use me to get to Julie.
Are you okay with that?
Of course. Ranger picked a spaghetti noodle out of my hair.
I'd like to think I was protecting you at the same time.
You mean I won't be a sacrificial virgin?
Too late for that, babe.
My cell phone rang and I looked at the screen. Morelli. How's it going? I asked him.
The ME is releasing Carmen's body today. We didn't get anything off the car. Doubtful if we'll get any DNA off Carmen. There wasn't a struggle. She was shot at close range through the open driver's side window. If you're reading the papers, you'll see this is getting a lot of press. Daughter of Trenton Bounty Hunter is kidnapped and wife murdered.
Do you have any theories, suspects?
I'm working on some angles, and I'm under a lot of pressure from above to bring Ranger in.
Understood.
Where are you?
I'm at home. There was an incident at the bonds office, and I ended up wearing my lunch, so I came home to change.
You aren't harboring a fugitive, are you?
Who, me? Morelli gave a disgusted sigh and hung up.
Sounds like that went well, Ranger said.
Yeah, if I get caught with you, I'll go to jail for 1,000 years. Ranger gave me a smile that didn't quite make it to his eyes.
I could make it worthwhile.
I'll hold that thought. Right now I need to take a shower and get the noodles out of my hair. I went into the bedroom, closed the door, and stripped out of the spaghetti clothes. I hopped into the bathroom and stopped short when I looked at the sink. Ranger's razor and shaving gel. Ranger's toothbrush. I went back to the bedroom and looked in my closet. Ranger's clothes. Ranger had moved in. I locked myself in the bathroom and did some more deep breathing. Chapter 11. Ranger was slouched back in his chair, long legs stretched out under the dining room table, his attention on the computer screen. How's the search going? I asked him.
It's going in slow motion. It feels like 2 lifetimes have gone by since he took Julie.
Anything new?
Pictures and background on Scrog. His mother is Puerto Rican. He comes by his skin and hair, naturally. Nothing that has a big orange arrow on it saying, look here. A profiler would find him interesting. Some of his makeup is classic, and some is off the map. He's an only child. Early school reports are that he's smart, but he doesn't apply himself. He's a dreamer, shy. Doesn't participate in class activities. Middle school, he does a nosedive. Failing grades. One of 12 boys questioned about molestation by a local priest. He receives counseling, and the diagnosis is that he has low self-esteem and has difficulty separating fact from fiction, leading to a poor sense of consequence for his actions. High school, he's tracked with underachievers, doing some remedial work. At home, he's spending hours playing computer games. His mother thinks he's a genius. His counselor thinks he might be borderline psychopath. His work history is erratic. He can't keep a job. He resents authority. Most of his jobs are sales. Music stores, movie theaters. Had a good run managing a comic book store with a gaming room. Took some computer courses at a community college, but nothing came of it. Were you able to find his connection to you? Do you remember Zach Campbell? He was caught on a drug bust 2 years ago. He skipped, and while he was in the wind, they tied him to a double homicide. I tracked him to Virginia, and Tank and I made the apprehension in a music and video store. Scrog was working in the store at the time. I don't remember him, and I didn't have any contact with him that I remember. It was a quiet bust. We went in with mall security waiting at the store entrance. I approached Campbell, introduced myself, cuffed him, and walked him out. No guns drawn? No, not necessary. I guess you made an impression. Apparently. That was the only connection I could find. I went into the kitchen and investigated the refrigerator. It was filled with ranger food. Sandwiches, fruit, low-fat cream cheese, yogurt, and assorted snack vegetables all cut and washed. I selected a baby carrot and dropped it into Rex's cage. I looked at the phone on the counter by the cage and saw that I now had a working answering machine. I don't want an answering machine, I yelled at Ranger.
When this is over, you can throw it away.
I took a turkey sandwich and brought it to the table to eat.
I thought you had spaghetti for lunch, Ranger said.
I wore it. I didn't get to eat any. The entire country's looking for Scrog. Hard to believe he hasn't been caught.
He's enjoying the game, Ranger said. Probably has Julie stashed somewhere and goes out in disguise. He'll be careful at first, but the longer the game goes on, the more chances he'll take.
Is there something I can do?
You can go about your business so he has a chance to make a move on you.
He took a cell phone from the table.
If you need to call me, use this phone. My number's programmed in. And make sure you're always wearing the panic button. It's tied into the Rangeman network. I can track you if you're wearing the button. If you catch someone following you, don't try to lose him.
I looked at the car keys on the table.
I'll be in a blue Honda Civic, a silver BMW sedan, or a silver Toyota Corolla, Ranger said. And Tank will be in a green Ford Explorer.
I'll be in a black and white Mini Cooper, I said. And my knees will be knocking. I drove to the bond's office and parked at the curb where I could easily be seen. Stephanie Plum, psycho bait. Lula and Connie and Melvin were huddled around Connie's desk, debating the files in front of them.
These people all creep me out, Lula said. I don't want to work with none of them.
I like the blonde woman with the eagle tattooed on her big, huge breast, Melvin said.
We all turned to look at him, and he blushed bright red.
Pickle, if you want to be a pervert, you got to stop blushing like that, Lula said. You're going to give perverts a bad name.
The door opened and a woman walked in. I heard you're looking for someone to do bond enforcement, she said. We looked her over. No black leather, no tattoos that were visible, no gun strapped to her leg, no obvious missing teeth. Already she was ahead of everyone else. She was about my height and weight, maybe a little chunkier. She had short brown hair cut into a bob, not a lot of makeup, some lip gloss. She was wearing a three-button collared knit shirt and tan slacks. She was perfectly pleasant-looking and amazingly forgettable. She extended her hand.
Mary Maisonette.
Maisonette, Lula said. Isn't that a puppet?
That's Marionette, Connie said.
I haven't got a lot of experience, Mary said, but I'm a fast learner. My dad was a cop in Chicago, so I grew up around law enforcement types. Connie gave her one of the forms we'd printed out, asking for name and vital statistics. Like human being, yes or no? When she left, Connie punched her name into the computer.
She looks sort of normal, Lula said. What's with that?
The information started flooding in.
Everything checks out, Connie said. Never been convicted of a crime, good credit, high school graduate, waited tables for 2 years. The rest of her work history is on the line at a small brewery in Illinois. Relocated here 2 months ago following her boyfriend, 28 years old.
You could start her in the office doing telephone work and computer searches, I said. Then after she gets a feel for the job, we can take her on some road trips.
Okay, Connie said. If everyone's agreed, I'll call her and see if she can start tomorrow.
I'm getting restless, Lula said. I feel like I need to go out and apprehend a scumbag.
Lonnie Johnson's still open, but I don't know where to begin with him, I said.
I'm chuffed over Caroline Scarzoli, Lula said. We should have nabbed her. How does it look to get run over by a freaky old lady like that?
If we go back to the store, she'll shoot us.
Not if we buy something.
No, I'm not buying any more dildos.
Don't have to be a dildo. They got lots of good stuff in that store. I might need a pair of panties.
Okay, fine, I said. I'll wait in the car and you can go in and buy panties.
I'm not just going for the panties, Lula said. It's my cover. This here's serious shit. I'm going to make an apprehension.
I grabbed my shoulder bag and palmed my keys. I'll drive. I drove, eyes forward, and I avoided checking the rearview mirror. If Ranger was following me to Pleasure Treasures, I preferred not to know. I parked on the street, two doors down from the store. I'm not going in, I said. If she shoots you, you're going to have to drag your ass out the door because I'm not going in to pick you up.
Huh, Lula said. I thought we were partners. How's that for a partner to act? I'd go in there for you. I'd walk on fire for you. I'd bitch slap the devil for you. You wouldn't catch me sitting in no car if my partner goes into the danger zone. If it was you and they're getting shot for upholding the law of this great land, I'd be there right behind you.
Oh, for Christ's sake, I said, wrenching the door open. Just shut up. I'll go with you. Caroline looked up and narrowed her eyes when we walked in.
We're just shopping today, Lula said. I was real happy with my dildo, and I thought I'd come back and browse. We've got a one-day special sale on electronics, Caroline said. In case you're interested. I might be interested, Lula said. I had a Madame Orgasmo, but I burned out the motor.
I made an unsuccessful attempt to choke back a snort of nervous laughter. I turned my back on Lula and made a show of being engrossed in a display of erotic oils. There was Lick It and Love It Chocolate Love Cream, Kama Sutra Slick, Rub It and It Gets Hot, Blow on It and It Gets Hotter, Spank Me Peppermint Cooling Cream, Pleasure Jelly to minimize friction and avoid irritation, enriched with vitamin E and completely edible. Here's the thing about all this stuff. Some of it I thought looked like fun. And truth was, I wouldn't have minded if Joe brought some of it home. I just felt like an idiot buying it for myself.
She's got some good electronics, Lula said to me. You want to come take a look?
No, that's okay, I said. I'm trying to decide on these oils.
I think you should come take a look, Lula said. I might need you to, you know, help me out here. Those oils are all overpriced, Caroline said. You're better off buying one of these vibrating miracle makers and they throw the oil in for free. It's a lot better bargain.
Gee, I really don't need a miracle maker, though, I said. I got a house full of them already.
Well, I need a miracle right now, Lula said to me. You got any miracle makers in your bag? Do you see what I'm saying?
Sorry, I told her. I left my miracle maker at home. It's in my cookie jar.
What's going on? Caroline said. You two aren't thinking about trying anything funny, are you?
Lula reached in her bag to get her gun, but Caroline was faster. Caroline hauled the shotgun out from under the counter and pointed it at Lula's head.
You better be reaching in that bag to get your credit card, Caroline said. That's just what I'm doing, Lula said. You sure are an untrusting person. I'm thinking you both want to buy one of these lady workhorse cordless personal massagers. And I'm even going to throw in extra oil, Caroline said.
I glared at Lula and forked over my credit card.
It's not so bad, Lula said when we were in the mini. It's not like you got something useless. You'll get years of satisfaction out of this machine. Just don't go for thirds on account of apparently that's what freezes up the motor.
I dropped Lula back at the office and sat at the curb for a while. I wanted Scrog to find me. I wanted to make contact and be done with it. I wanted the nightmare to be over for Julie and Ranger and everyone involved. After a couple minutes, I called Ranger. Is anyone tailing me?
Not that I can tell.
Where are you?
Across the street, half a block south.
Now what?
Now we go home and order takeout.
15 minutes later, I opened the door to my apartment, and Ranger followed me in. This is frustrating, I said.
He's out there, waiting for the right time to make his move. Probably he's enjoying the foreplay. We need to be patient. The police are scrambling, looking for him to be recognized. We're working from a different direction. We're playing the game with him.
I tossed my purse and the Pleasure Treasures bag on the kitchen counter and rooted through the drawer where I kept all the takeout menus. What do you feel like? I asked Ranger. Chinese, Italian, pizza, fried chicken?
Ranger shuffled through the menus. Chinese. I'll have brown rice, steamed vegetables, and lemon chicken.
And this is the problem with Ranger. I could spend a lot of time in bed with him, but he'd drive me nuts in the kitchen.
I called the order in, adding kung pao chicken, fried rice, fried dumplings, and a piece of their great wall of chocolate cake.
When was the last time you talked to Morelli? Ranger wanted to know.
When I came home to change clothes.
You should check in with him. See if anything new is going on. Let him know you're working tonight.
I slouched against the counter. I hate lying to Morelli.
You're not lying, Ranger said. You're omitting some information. And if it makes you feel better, I'll make sure you work tonight.
I did an eye roll and dialed Morelli.
What?
Morelli said. I was just checking in.
Sorry, I'm still at work. Some big bad gangster just took about 50 rounds in front of the B&B car wash and set a new world record for leaking out body fluids. They're not going to have to embalm this guy.
Anything new on Julie Martin or Carmen?
Nothing. We're waiting on DNA from Carmen. I'd like to spend some time talking to you, but I have to go. I'll be doing paperwork on this until tomorrow morning. Miss you. Be careful.
And Morelli disconnected. Some guy got ventilated in front of the B&B car wash, I told Ranger. Morelli's working it.
Morelli's a good man with a sucky job, Ranger said.
We were still in the kitchen, and Ranger glanced over at the Pleasure Treasures bag.
You must really like that store. You keep going back.
I don't want to talk about it. He looked in the bag and smiled.
Lady Workhorse?
Ranger read the hype on the box.
Hours of pleasure guaranteed.
You're going to torture me with this, aren't you? I said. Ranger took the gadget out of the box.
I think we should take it for a test drive.
He turned it on, and it hummed in his hand.
Feels good, he said. Gentle action.
You're an expert?
No,
he said, shutting it off, setting it on the counter. I'm not really a gadget man. He took the bottle of oil out of the bag.
This holds more interest for me. Let's see what this does.
He opened the bottle, poured a drop into the palm of my hand, and rubbed it with his fingertip.
What do you think?
It's warm.
It says on the bottle, it tastes like cherries.
He touched his tongue to my oiled palm, and I felt myself go damp, and I worried my knees might buckle. Well? I asked.
Cherries.
The doorbell rang, and I sucked in some air.
Are you expecting anyone? Ranger asked.
The food.
This fast?
They're just around the corner on Hamilton. Ranger capped the oil and got the door. And we carted the food into the living room to eat in front of the television. Scrog has been in Jersey for 5 days, I said. He has to be staying somewhere. He has to be buying food. Why aren't we turning anything up? Where's he getting his money from?
You don't need money if you have a credit card. And he knows how to scam credit cards.
I speared a dumpling. I'm not good at waiting.
I've noticed.
Chapter 12. I woke up wrapped in Ranger's arms, our legs entwined, my face snuggled into his neck. He smelled nice, and he felt even better, warm and friendly. I enjoyed it for a moment before reality took hold. This is a little deja vu, I said to him. Didn't you start the night out on the couch?
No, I was on the computer when you went to bed. You were already asleep by the time I was done.
So you climbed in next to me? I thought when you moved in you'd be sleeping on the couch.
You thought wrong.
You can't sleep in my bed. It just isn't done. I have a boyfriend. He's a nice guy, but he's not good with sharing.
Babe, we're sharing a bed, not a sexual experience. I can control myself if you can.
Oh, great. Ranger's face creased into a smile.
You can't control yourself?
I bit into my lower lip.
Stephanie, he said, you shouldn't tell me things like that. I'll take advantage.
I blew out a sigh and rolled away from him. No, you won't. You're Ranger. You're the guy who protects me.
Yes, but not from myself.
I kicked the covers off and slid out of bed. I needed to find Edward Scrog. I needed to find him now. I couldn't manage another morning of waking up next to Ranger. I took a shower and called Morelli. What's going on? I said.
I don't know, Morelli said, sounding half asleep. Give me a hint.
With Carmen, with Julie Martin.
Why hasn't someone found Julie Martine yet? What the heck are you guys doing? I don't understand what's taking so long.
What time is it? Morelli wanted to know.
I heard some fumbling and then swearing.
7:30, Morelli said. It was after 2 when I got to bed.
Did I wake you? Sorry. You always get up so early.
Not today. Talk to you later.
And he hung up. I stomped out of the bedroom and into the kitchen where Ranger was making coffee. I'm going out, I said.
Where are you going?
I'm going out for muffins.
Give me 5 minutes to get my shoes on.
I don't have 5 minutes, I said. I have things to do. I've got the panic button. I'll be fine. I'll bring a muffin back for you. What do you want? Zucchini, no fat, no sugar, extra bran? I turned to go, and Ranger scooped me up and carried me into the bedroom and tossed me onto the bed.
5 minutes, he said, lacing his shoes.
I lay there, spread eagle, waiting for him. Very macho, I said. He grabbed my hand and yanked me to my feet.
Sometimes you try my patience.
You don't like it? You can leave. He slammed me into the wall and kissed me.
I didn't say I didn't like it.
Okay, good to get that straightened out, I said. Are we going to get muffins or what? He walked to the lot with me, stuffed me into the passenger seat of the Mini, and got behind the wheel. I thought you were supposed to be secretly following me. I thought I was supposed to be luring Scrog into action.
This morning we're both luring him into action. Where do you want to go for muffins?
Tasty Pastry, and then Italian Bakery, and then Prizzoli's, and then Cluck in a Bucket for a breakfast muffin, and then the convenience store in Hamilton for a paper.
Trying to get yourself kidnapped?
Do you have a better idea? Ranger drove out of the lot and headed for Hamilton.
Nice to know you're going proactive.
By the time we got to the convenience store, we had the Mini filled with muffin bags.
Get coffee and a couple papers, Ranger said. We'll have a picnic.
10 minutes later, we were on a bench in front of a used bookstore in Hamilton next to the bonds office. The only way we'd have higher visibility would be to stand in the middle of the road. Anybody following us? I asked Ranger.
3 cars, Tank in the green SUV, a gray Taurus, and a minivan.
Aren't you afraid you'll get arrested?
I'm more afraid I'll get shot by some Good Samaritan citizen who saw my picture on America's Most Wanted.
He took a coffee and called Tank.
Do you have a fix on the Taurus and minivan?
I chose a carrot cake muffin and waited through a couple beats of silence while Ranger took in the information.
Amateur bounty hunters, Ranger finally said to me. Disable them, Ranger said to Tank. I don't want Stephanie dragging that clutter around with her.
He disconnected, and we sat there for a half hour eating our muffins, drinking our coffee, and reading the paper. We were ready to leave for greener pastures when Morelli drove by, came to a screeching halt, and pulled to the curb. He got out of his SUV and walked over to us.
You want to explain this to me?
I told him about Edward Scrog and the scrapbook and the computer blogs.
So you're sitting here trying to provoke him into making a move?
Yep.
This is a dangerous, stupid idea. He shot his wife, and there's no reason to think he won't shoot you.
Yeah, I said, but I don't think he'll shoot me right away.
That makes me feel a lot better, Morelli said. I'll tell that to my acid reflux.
I'll be fine, I swear, I told him. Morelli made a disgusted hand gesture.
I didn't see this, Morelli said, but I want to be kept apprised of the evidence you gather. And if you overstep boundaries with Stephanie and move in on me, he said, turning to Ranger, I'll find you, and it won't be good.
Morelli took a blueberry muffin out of a bag, jogged back to his car, and took off. Ranger smiled at me.
Just so you know, that's not going to stop me from trying to move in on him.
You and Morelli have an entirely different agenda. Morelli wants to marry me, and you wanna... I stopped, because I wasn't sure what word I wanted to insert. Not that any word was necessary. We both knew what Ranger wanted.
Babe, Ranger said, what I want to do to you is no secret, and I want to do it bad. But I can think with 2 body parts simultaneously, and I'm not going to do anything stupid.
That includes marriage?
Marriage, pregnancy, and anything non-consensual.
He ran a finger under the strap on my tank top.
I will make a move with partial consent.
Ranger collected the bags and empty coffee cups and newspapers. He let himself into the bonds office, shut down the alarm, and dumped the trash into Connie's wastebasket. He reset the alarm, exited the office, and locked the door.
I need to go back to your apartment, he said. I have work to do this morning. Tank will stay with you, and I'll join him later in the day in a separate car. Try to move around and be visible. Remember to always wear your panic button.
Ranger pulled me to him and kissed me before we got into the mini.
Just in case Scrog is watching, I don't want to miss an opportunity to piss him off, Ranger said.
Connie, Lula, and Melvin Pickle were in the office when I returned.
Mary Maisonette is scheduled to start this morning, Connie said. I'm going to have her run some of the simple search programs. If you have phone work or background checks, just put your file in the queue.
I dropped Charles Chin, Lonnie Johnson, and Doobie Biagi onto the Maisonette to-do stack, writing a brief note for each. For Chin and Biagi, I asked for work and residence histories, followed by phone verification of the most current. For Johnson, I simply said, find him. Johnson's file was already thick with information. I didn't expect Maisonette to find him, but sometimes a new set of eyes saw things previously missed. I paged through the remaining files and looked for jobs that didn't require the help of a partner. Edward Scrog would be more likely to approach me if I was alone. I put Bernard Brown at the top of the list. He was low bond and low risk. His danger quotient was close to zero. Bernard had gotten drunk off his ass at Marilyn Gorley's wedding, and in a display of ill-timed homage, had set fire to a floor-to-ceiling drapery while holding his lighter aloft during a John Lennon song. The result was approximately $80,000 in damages to the banquet room of Latucci's restaurant. Probably no criminal charges would have been pressed, but Bernard had panicked and punched out the maitre d' when the man had attempted to extinguish Bernard's flaming hair with a bottle of beer. Bernard was a self-employed accountant working out of his house. Should be an easy catch. I'm going to help Bernard Brown get re-registered for court, I said to Lula. It's not a two-man job. Maybe you want to stay here and help Mary get started. Tell her about being a BEA.
Sure, I could do that. I got a lot of things I could tell her.
I avoided looking at Connie and whisked myself out of the office before I got stuck with Lula. I was on the sidewalk when I got a call from Morelli.
I thought you should know we just towed an abandoned rental. It was rented at Newark Airport on Thursday around 8 p.m. The name on the rental agreement was Carmen Minoso. That's why it bounced back to me. Not sure how it slipped through the FBI search. Maybe no one thought to look for something registered to Carmen. Anyway, I've got the car impounded and we're going through it. It looks like blood on the back seat. No way of knowing whose blood it is right now.
Is it a lot of blood?
Doesn't look like someone died there, if that's what you're asking. The bad news is, there was also a scrunchie on the floor of the back seat. You know, one of those things the kids use to tie up a ponytail. We photographed it and emailed it to Rachel Martin, and it's tentatively been identified as belonging to Julie Martin.
Where did you find the car?
It was by the train station.
I called Ranger and gave him the news. Then I got into the mini and drove down Hamilton. I was following Ranger's advice. Keep moving forward. Try not to think about the blood in the car. Bernard Brown lived in a neighborhood that was adjacent to the Berg, just past St. Francis Hospital. I drove down his street checking off house numbers, parking when I reached his duplex. Brown was 43 years old and divorced. His house was neat but showing wear. A small sign next to Bernard's front door read, Bernard Brown, CPA. I rang his bell and waited, resisting the urge to burst into tears or frantically look around for stalkers. Bernard answered the door in his pajamas and a knit cap.
Yes.
I gave him my card and introduced myself.
I'll be a laughingstock if I go into court, he said. I know people. I do taxes for half the cops. I'll have to take my hat off and I'll never live it down.
My eyes went to the knit cap. 80 degrees out and he was wearing a knit cap. I looked at the mugshot on his bond agreement. Yow, torched hair. Anything go up in flames besides your hair? I asked him.
The entire north side of the banquet room. Luckily no one was hurt, except for the maitre d'. I broke his nose when he threw beer on me. That was before I knew my hair was on fire.
It's probably not so bad, I said. Take your hat off. Maybe we can fix it. He took his hat off, and I tried not to grimace. He had patches of angry red scalp and tufts of singed hair, and it was all greasy with salve. Have you been to a doctor?
Yeah, he said. He gave me the salve to put on.
You should shave your head. Shaved heads are sexy these days. He rolled his eyes up like he was trying to see the top of his head.
I guess so, but I don't think I can do it myself.
Get dressed and we'll go to a hair salon before I take you to court.
Okay, but not the one on Hamilton. She's a big busybody, and not the one on Chambers Street. My ex-wife goes there. And I don't want to go to the mall. Everyone looks at you. And it's all women in there. I'd feel funny. Maybe you could find some place where men get shaved. What's this?
Bernie asked.
Why are we here?
This is the only place I could think of where men regularly get shaved.
This is a funeral parlor.
Yeah. Have you ever seen anyone laid out with a two-day-old beard?
No.
Everyone's perfectly groomed when they get put in the box. And it's very private. And I just met these guys. They're new here, and they seem nice. And they make their own cookies.
It's creepy.
Don't be such a whiner. This is what I came up with. Take it or leave it. Bernie got out of the mini and followed me into the funeral home. I walked through the lobby and saw that the office door was open. I could see Dave Nelson at his desk. He was wearing a crisp white dress shirt and navy slacks. He looked up and smiled when I got close. "We have a problem," I told him.
"Oh, dear, I'm so sorry."
"Not that kind of problem. Bernie here has had a hair disaster and needs someone to shave his head. I know you guys shave men all the time, so I thought maybe you could help us out." Bernie took his hat off, and Dave yelled for his partner.
"Scooter is here somewhere," Dave said. "He's wonderful with makeup and hair. He's wonderful at it. He used to work at the Estee Lauder counter at Saks."
"Estee Lauder?" Bernie said. "I don't know. That's women's stuff."
Scooter came up behind us.
"Estee Lauder has a wonderful line just for men. A dab of their eye serum each night would take years off your face," he said to Bernie.
He extended his hand.
"I'm Scooter. I was in the kitchen making cookies for tonight's viewing. I chose snickerdoodles for Mrs. Kessman and big chunk chocolate chip for Mr. Stanko. I wanted something masculine for Mr. Stanko. He was a truck driver. That's such a guy job, don't you think?"
Bernie shook Scooter's hand, and there was bolt and run all over Bernie's face, so I clapped a bracelet on him and attached the other half to my wrist. "Just a formality," I said to Bernie. "Don't give it another thought."
"Oh, dear," Scooter said. "Is he a criminal?"
"No," I told Scooter. "He's having a bad hair month, and I thought he looked like he was getting cold feet. We were wondering if you could shave his head."
"Of course I can shave his head," Scooter said. "He'll look wonderful. And I have some moisturizer, which will be much better than that dreadful grease he's using now. Follow me back to my workroom."
We crossed the lobby and trailed after Scooter into the new addition to the rambling funeral home.
"We'll use treatment room number 2, Scooter said. "Number 1 is occupied."
Bernie and I peeked into the room. Tilt-top stainless steel grooved table. Slight odor of formaldehyde. Carts filled with instruments best not seen in the light of day.
"This is an embalming room," Bernie said.
"Isn't it wonderful?" Scooter said. "State of the art, and it has excellent light. Sit on the little stool by the table and I'll get my razor. I've gotten used to working on people who are horizontal, so this will be a fun experience."
"Oh, fuck," Bernie whispered. "Get me out of here."
"Chill," I told him. "He's going to shave your head, not drain your body fluids. It's not a big deal. And when he's done, I bet he'll give you a cookie." "I guess congratulations are in order," I said to Scooter when he got into position behind Bernie. "Sounds like you've got a full house. Mrs. Kessman and Mr. Stanko and a third body in prep."
"The third body is just a holdover. It's poor Carmen Minoso. They autopsied her and released her, but we can't ship the body until Thursday. I had some free time, so I was trying to get her prettied up a little. Not much you can do to someone who's had their brain surgically removed, not to mention has a big bullet hole in the head. But I did what I could to soften it for her parents in case they open the casket."
Carmen Minoso. And she was hanging out with nothing to do until Thursday. "She needs a viewing," I said to Scooter.
"Excuse me?"
"She's famous. The Berg loves a murder. You won't be able to shoehorn all the mourners in. You'll have to give out tickets like at the bakery."
"I don't know. I'd have to check with her parents."
"She doesn't belong to her parents. She belongs to her husband."
"The murderer?"
"He's still her husband, and I bet he'd want her to have a viewing."
"Interesting," Scooter said. "I'd have to bake a lot of cookies."
I called Ranger on the special cell phone. "You're not going to believe this. I'm at the funeral home on Hamilton, and they've got Carmen here."
"Should I ask what you're doing at the funeral home?"
"No, it's not important. The important thing is, Carmen is here and isn't getting shipped off to Virginia until Thursday, and I thought since you're her husband, you might want to hold a viewing so her friends and relatives who might be in the area could see her one last time."
"Gruesome, but clever," Ranger said. "Let me talk to whoever is in charge."
I passed the phone over to Scooter.
"Is this Mr. Minoso?" Scooter asked. "The husband of the deceased?"
Chapter 13
"Run this by me again," Lula said. "You took Bernie Brown to the funeral home to get his head shaved?"
"Yes, and it worked out great. And I checked him in at the courthouse after he got shaved, and he's already bonded out again."
And while you were at the funeral home, you ran into Karma Minoso?
Yep. She was passed on to the funeral home for transport back to Virginia. Only they can't do it until Thursday.
And while you were there, Ranger called in and arranged for her to have a viewing?
He is her husband of record, and as such, he has a right to a viewing.
I don't suppose you got to talk to him.
Mostly he talked to Scooter, financial arrangements and everything. Connie had been the one to rebond Bernie. She'd gotten back to the office minutes before me and was in the process of repairing a chipped nail.
I don't usually go to viewings, but I'm going to that one, she said, adding a fresh coat of fire engine red to her index finger.
Mary Maisonette was on the couch with a stack of files, making notes, not saying anything, but not missing much either. I wasn't sure how I felt about her. She seemed likable enough, but something was off. Usually people are a little nervous on a new job. They try too hard, or they try to become background. Mary Maisonette didn't show any of that. She was dressed in running shoes, jeans, and another of the 3-button knit shirts. No big hair lacquered with hairspray, only lip gloss. Not exactly a Jersey girl, but then she hadn't been in Jersey for very long.
How's it going? I said to her.
I have the information he asked me to get on Charles Chin and Doobie Biagi. I haven't had a chance to make the phone calls. I was going to do that now. I haven't done anything on Lonnie Johnson yet. Sorry.
It's okay. Lonnie Johnson is probably in Peru. I've run into a brick wall on him.
I thought it wouldn't hurt to have someone new take a look. Don't spend a lot of time and energy on him, but maybe you can make a feeler phone call once in a while to one of the contacts.
I read about Ranger and Carmen in the paper, she said. And the little girl, Julie Martine? How terrible. What a tragedy.
Yeah, Lula said. It's pretty freaky. Is there any information on the viewing yet? She asked me. I don't want to miss that one.
Tomorrow at 6.
Darn. I got a gig tomorrow at 7. I'm wearing my new feather outfit, and Sally and me got a new song rehearsed. I'll have to get there when the doors open so I can fit it all in.
Isn't 7 early for a band to play?
It's another old people's home. They get medicated at 8 and it's lights out at 9, Lula said.
It's a little creepy that her husband murdered her and now he's arranging a viewing, Mary said. Is he here in Trenton?
I don't know, I said to Mary. He made the arrangements over the phone.
I never heard for sure that anyone said he murdered her, Lula said.
The paper said he was wanted for suspicion, Mary said. Do you know him? Does he work for this office?
Yeah, we all know him, Lula said. He's a good guy, too. If he does something bad, it's because he has a good reason.
Hard to believe there's a good reason for murdering your wife, Mary said.
Maybe she was a spy, Lula said. She could have been a secret agent or a terrorist.
Or an alien from Mars, Connie said.
Huh, Lula said. You're making fun of me, but I was serious. Who's to know if she was a double agent or something?
She wasn't a double agent, I said. She was a woman on the edge.
She shot at Stephanie, Lula told Mary. Put a ding in her car.
Why did she do that? Mary asked.
Frustrated because she couldn't find her husband, I said. I approached her at the wrong time.
Now what are we going to do? Lula wanted to know. You got someone on target for this afternoon?
I have some errands I have to run, and then tonight I'm going after Caroline Scarzoli.
I'm surprised to hear you say that, Lula said. You must have some room left on your credit card.
I have no room left on my credit card, and I'm fed up with this woman. She's going down.
And how are you planning on doing this?
I'm going to wait outside and ambush her when she closes up shop.
You gotta be careful, Lula said. She's 72. You could break something that can't be fixed. Hard to find spare parts for something that old.
A more likely scenario was that she'd beat the crap out of me. Are you riding with me for Scarzoli?
Hell yeah, Lula said. I'm not missing you duke it out with a 72-year-old porn peddler.
The store closes at 8 o'clock. I'll meet you at the corner of Elm and 12th Street at 7:30. I left the bond's office and sat in the mini for a couple minutes. I looked around and adjusted the rearview mirror. Didn't see anyone, but that didn't mean much. I edged out into traffic and drove toward the center of the city. I turned onto Ryder and then Haywood Street. 2 blocks later, I was in front of Ranger's office building. I nosed the mini up to the garage gates, remoted them open, and slid into the garage interior. I sat there for 10 minutes with my motor off. I didn't have business here. I was simply riding around trying to attract attention. The plan was to cruise every location Scrog might be watching and try to get him to follow me. I left the Rangeman garage and drove toward the train station. I turned onto Montgomery and got a call from Tank.
You picked up 2 more bandits, Tank said. One of them is an idiot, and the other is a federal idiot. We're going to get rid of them for you. Don't look back.
I didn't know exactly what that meant, but I didn't look back.
I drove past the train station. I drove up and down Hamilton. I stopped at Cluckin' a Bucket for a soda. I drove past the bonds office. I drove through the burg and stopped at my parents' house.
Did you hear? Grandma Mazur said. There's going to be a viewing for that poor Carmen Minoso. Not often you get to see someone's been autopsied.
I'm sure it'll be closed casket, I said to Grandma.
That would be a shame, Grandma said. Of course, sometimes those lids just spring open.
We were in the kitchen, and I saw my mother flick a quick look to the cabinet by the sink where she kept her emergency liquor stash.
I might have to get a new dress for tomorrow night, Grandma said. It's going to be a big hoo-ha there. I hear they're thinking about giving out numbered wristbands if you want to get up by the casket. And there's a rumor that Ranger will show up. I bet the place will be crawling with hot FBI guys.
I found myself wishfully staring at the liquor cabinet with my mother. Tomorrow night was going to be hideous. If there was any justice in this world, Edward Scrogg would be caught and Julie Martine would be found unharmed before tomorrow night's viewing.
I'm going with Lorraine Schlein, Grandma said to me. You're welcome to come with us if you want.
Gee, thanks, but I'm going to pass, I told her. I might just pop in for a minute or two on my own. My mother latched onto my arm. You will get there on time, and you will watch your grandmother every second, do you hear me? You will not allow her to pry that casket lid open. You will not take her to a nudie bar after the viewing, no matter how much she begs, and you will not allow her to spike the punch bowl.
Why me?
You're responsible for this. It's one of your crime schemes. I can feel it in my bones. Myra Sklar said she saw you going into the funeral home today.
Coincidence, I said.
I looked up and down the street when I left my parents' house. No suspicious cars in sight. I got into the Mini, drove to the cross street, and my phone rang.
You just picked up a hitchhiker, Ranger said. He's in a silver Honda Civic half a block behind you. He's wearing a black ball cap, and from this distance, he's looking good. We're running the plate on the car. Take him home with you.
I drove out of the burg and turned right onto Hamilton. It was close to 5, and Hamilton was clogged with cars and impatient Jersey drivers. I watched my rearview mirror and saw the Civic make the turn. He was 4 cars back. I went through a green light, and the Civic got a red. Ranger was still open on the phone.
Don't worry about it, he said. I've got a visual on him. I don't want him to suspect he's been spotted. Go home and park and go up to your apartment. We'll take it from here.
An hour later, Ranger let himself into my apartment and threw his keys on the kitchen counter.
We lost him. He turned around before he got to your apartment and drove to the government complex. Then he went into a parking garage and didn't come out. Dumped the car and left on foot, and somehow we missed him.
Do you think he saw you?
Don't know.
You think it was Scrogg?
Yes. The car was stolen. From what we could see, he fit the description.
Ranger stood with his hands flat on the counter and his head down.
I can't believe I lost him. I didn't want to get too close to him in the parking garage. I wanted him to lead us to Julie.
You'll have another chance, I said. He's not going away until he completes his family. I opened the refrigerator door.
And look at this. Here's a piece of good news. While we were gone, the food fairy arrived and filled the refrigerator.
Ranger grabbed a beer and a roast beef sandwich.
It's too bad this guy is crazy, Ranger said. He's not stupid, and he has good instincts. If he was even the slightest bit sane, I'd hire him.
Ranger took his beer and sandwich into the living room and turned the television on. He slouched on the couch and surfed until he found local news. His picture came up, and then Carmen's. The anchor read a short clip about the viewing and the fact that there was still an alert for the missing child. Ranger sunk lower into the couch.
They said I was armed and dangerous.
Yeah, I said, sitting down next to him. They got that right. Ranger crooked an arm around my neck and kissed me at my hairline.
I talked to Rachel this afternoon, Ranger said. She's falling apart. She had to be sedated after they showed her the hair scrunchie. I know this isn't my fault, but I feel responsible. I wish I could do more.
It looks to me like you have every resource available to you working to find Julie. I don't know what more anyone could do.
I feel guilty sitting here.
Make the most of it. In a half hour, you'll be following me around again. I'm determined to get Caroline Scarzoli. I'm on a jumper when she closes the store tonight.
I think you should go shopping first. I like when you bring all that kinky stuff home.
I walked out the back door alone, but I knew Ranger was watching. He'd gotten a 10-minute head start on me and was waiting to follow me to Elm and 12th, where I'd hook up with Lula. Tank was there, too, and God knows who else. Bad enough I was going to look like a moron running down Caroline Scarzoli. Now I was going to do it in front of Ranger and his men. I didn't get any warning phone calls, so I assumed the only people following me were good guys. I saw Lula's red Firebird parked on Elm. I pulled up behind her and got out of the mini. I had cuffs tucked into the waistband on my jeans, and a stun gun and pepper spray stuffed into my two back pockets.
"Looks like you're loaded for bear," Lula said.
"I just want to get this over and done."
"I hope you know this is probably going to ruin it for me to go shopping here, and I was starting to like this store."
"Are you ready?"
"Sure I'm ready," Lula said,
and she hauled a Glock out of her handbag. "Caroline Scarzoli is a first-time shoplifter," I said. "You can't shoot her."
"Every time we see her, she pulls a gun on us."
"I don't care. You can't shoot her. That's the rule."
"Boy, who died and made you boss?"
"I've always been the boss."
"Huh," Lula said. "I was just going to scare her anyway."
"From what I've seen so far, it's going to take more than you and me and that gun to scare her. This time, we're going to try surprising her." We walked to where we could look into the store from the opposite side of the street. We were partially hidden behind a panel van, and we could see Scarzoli moving around, doing nothing. At 5 of 8, she started to go through the closing ritual, and Lula and I crossed the street and hid in the narrow alley separating the store from the neighboring business. The front lights went out, and we heard the door open and close and the deadbolt get thrown. I peeked around the corner and saw that Scarzoli was walking in the wrong direction. She was walking away from us. I popped out from the alley and tiptoed after her, closing the gap. She sensed I was there, turned and uttered an oath, and took off at a fast shuffle. I was almost within arm's reach of her when Tank stepped out of a shadow, blocking her way.
"Excuse me, ma'am," Tank said.
Scarzoli backed up a step and kicked Tank in the nuts. Hard to believe anyone that old could get her leg up that high, but Scarzoli scored a direct hit. Tank turned white and went down to his knees, hands at his crotch. Ranger was behind him, doubled over laughing. I tackled Scarzoli and wrestled her to the ground.
"Someone friggin' cuff her!" I yelled. "I'm trying," Lula said. "You gotta hold her still. She's like an octopus waving her arms and legs around."
I had at least 10 pounds on Scarzoli, and I used my weight to pin her. I saw Ranger's denim-clad legs straddle us both, saw his hands reach over and attach a cuff to Scarzoli's one wrist, and then the other. He was still smiling wide when he lifted me off Scarzoli and got me up on my feet.
"I can always count on you to brighten my day," Ranger said.
"You just like seeing Tank get kicked in the nuts."
"Yeah," Ranger said on a whisper of laughter. "That was worth the ticket."
Tank was up, trying to walk it off.
"Hope you didn't permanently damage anything," Lula said to him. "I always had an attraction to you." "Most women don't like me," Tank said, "on account of I'm too big." "I'm not most women," Lula said. "I could handle a big man. I like him big. The bigger the better is what I say."
Scarzoli was still on the ground. She was making angry cat sounds, and she kicked out with her feet when anyone came near her. "It's just a crappy first-time shoplifting charge," I said to her. "Get a grip!" Ranger got her under the armpits, dragged her to the green SUV, and eased her into the back seat.
"Take her to the station," he said to Tank. "Bring her around to the back door. Stephanie will follow you in." "I'll leave my car here and go with you," Lula said to Tank. "The crazy old lady might get out of control and you might need some help. And after we drop her off, we could go get a burger or something." "I'm supposed to watch Stephanie," Tank said. "Don't worry about it," Ranger said. "I'll take care of Stephanie."
Chapter 14. It was a little after 10 when I finally walked into my apartment. No sign of Ranger, so I called Morelli while I waited.
"Long time no see," Morelli said.
"Miss me?"
"No. Joyce Barnhart is here with her trained dogs."
"You're not going to get me going on that one. You hate Joyce Barnhart."
"Yeah, but Bob might like the dog part," Morelli said.
"I just took down the old lady who runs a porn shop on 12th. Tank tried to help me and she kicked him in the nuts."
"I'm sorry I missed it. I'm not being sarcastic either. I'm really sorry I missed it. I assume you've got a full contingent of Ranger's merry men watching your back."
"Yep. Mostly I pick up vigilantes, but we think Scrog followed me for a while this afternoon."
"Ranger called it in to me, and we determined the car was stolen. I reached the parking garage shortly after Ranger. Scrog slipped through my fingers, too."
"Will you be at Carmen's viewing tomorrow?"
"Yeah. We've called in the National Guard to help with crowd control."
"You haven't?"
"No, but we probably should. I was getting ready to go to bed," Morelli said. "I don't suppose you want to join me."
That would be nice, but I have to stay here and hope there's an attempt made to kidnap me.
Other men have girlfriends with safe, normal jobs, Morelli said, like swallowing swords and getting shot out of a cannon.
And he hung up. Ranger walked in and caught me with my head in the refrigerator. The food fairy left sandwiches, salad, fresh fruit, bagels, and cream cheese and lox from Nova Scotia, but no dessert, I told Ranger.
I don't eat dessert.
Yeah, but it's my refrigerator. Ranger removed the gun he'd been wearing and placed it on the kitchen counter beside his car keys.
I'll pass the word to Ella.
I nuked a bag of microwave popcorn and dumped it into a bowl. I talked to Morelli. He said you brought him in to help Tailscrog this afternoon. That was very classy.
Yeah, I'm a classy guy.
Ranger scooped up a handful of popcorn.
A little girl's life is at stake. That doesn't leave much room for ego and turf wars.
I brought the popcorn into the living room and turned the television on. Has anyone talked to Scrog's parents?
They're being watched, but no contact has been made. The feds are running that show, and they're playing it very quiet. My understanding is that Scrog was estranged from his parents. He wanted to be a cop, and they wanted him to go into a monastery.
Any news from the underground that he's trying to buy drugs or guns?
No, nothing.
Sightings?
Constantly. They go to the hotline. So far, they aren't seeing a pattern. There was a rash of sightings in South Beach yesterday, but it turned out to be Ricky Martin.
I was working my way through my 472 worthless cable stations, and Ranger's cell phone rang. He answered, and in a moment was on his feet, yanking me to mine.
One of my men just got shot, Ranger said.
He had his hand wrapped around my wrist, moving me through the apartment. He grabbed his keys and his gun off the kitchen counter without breaking stride. He was out the door and down the hall, his legs longer than mine, forcing me to run to keep up. It's pretty much a straight shot down Hamilton to St. Francis Hospital from my apartment building. If there's no traffic and he hit the lights right, it can be done in less than 10 minutes. We were in the silver BMW with Ranger behind the wheel, his cell phone on drive mode. Hal was on the line fielding calls through Ranger's central dispatch.
Manuel and Zero responded to a break-in at the bonds office, Hal said. Manuel approached the office and was shot 3 times through the plate glass window. The perp left through the back door. Do you want me to pass you through to Zero? He just arrived at the hospital with Manuel.
No, Ranger said. I'll take it from here.
We were a block from the bonds office, and traffic was stopped in front of us. Police strobes pulsed beyond the traffic. Ranger turned off Hamilton and wove his way through side streets. 5 minutes later, Ranger turned onto the street leading to the emergency entrance at the hospital.
I can't go in, he said. I'm going to drop you off, and then I'm going to loop around and park on Mifflin. Send Zero out to see me. Remind him to check that he isn't followed. You're wearing the panic button, and you have a secure phone. Call me when you know something about Manuel.
I hopped out of the BMW and hurried to the emergency room entrance. I saw Ranger wait until I was inside, and then he took off. Zero was sitting in the waiting room. Easy to find him in his rangeman uniform. How's Manuel? I asked.
He's in the back. He was hit 3 times, but he was wearing a vest, so the 2 he took in the chest just knocked him back. The 3rd got him in the arm. He's waiting for a doctor. It's a zoo in here tonight.
Zero was right about the zoo. The waiting room was packed with the walking wounded and their relatives. I sent Zero out to talk to Ranger, and I looked around to see who was on duty. Growing up in the Berg meant you almost always knew someone working emergency. Not that it mattered. There was always so much traffic in the ER area, if you knew the drill, you could just walk through to the treatment area. I got 2 cups of coffee from the machine and walked past the ER desk.
Excuse me, the woman on duty said. Just taking coffee to my husband, I told her. I'll be right out.
I went bed to bed, peeking around curtains, until I found Manuel. He was on his back, hooked up to an IV. His shirt was off,